Welcome to the Pure Flicks Podcast, a show brought to you by PureFlicks.com. PureFlicks.com, the faith, family, and fun video streaming service. Get ready for uplifting news, scripture, movie reviews, and interviews with some of your favorite actors, authors, and pastors. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Pure Flicks Podcast. I am Billy Hollowell, and I am really excited for today's show because we've got two people coming on who are actually friends of mine. They are great guys, and they're also extremely talented. The first is Chris Dowling. He's a movie director, a writer. He has worked on so many films, and his film right now that we're going to be talking about is Where Hope Grows. And Where Hope Grows is a powerful film about the value of life change and life in general and so much more. And then we're also going to have Christopher Polaha. He's an actor we've had on before. You know him. You've seen him in a million movies and TV shows. He is the star of Where Hope Grows. The film is streaming right now over at PureFlix, and the three of us are going to get together and talk about it, but not just the film itself, the making of it, going behind the scenes, and what it really means to put together a movie with deep and powerful meaning. So with no further ado, let's welcome Chris Dowling and Christopher Polaha to the Pure Flicks Podcast. Chris Dowling and Chris Polaha, how you guys doing?
Greetings, sir.
Hello, Billy.
Hello. All right. So you guys, you're both friends of mine, and we've talked a lot about the different projects you've worked on. I'm going to start with you, Dowling, and I'm going to go with last name so that I don't confuse you guys since you're both Chris. Okay. So we'll start. Dowling, Where Hope Grows, where did this idea, this concept for the film come from?
It was kind of cool because it turned out to be this amazing film that dealt with, you know, Down syndrome and special needs. But ultimately, when I was first writing it, I was really thinking about having a character who kind of discovers childlike faith at his lowest. And like someone who's had it all, and then it's kind of been taken away and has to discover like faith on like kind of just like ground floor level. And so I kind of needed this, harbinger of like, who could show me childlike faith that, you know, the world would look at and say, hey, they don't get it, but really the guy gets it. And so it really was Calvin's story, which Chris played. But ultimately, you know, it's kind of produce that is the engine for change. And then it had, obviously, then once I got knee deep in that, in this world of special needs, it changed my life completely, to be honest with you. So, but that was, it was almost like a, I don't want to say accident, but it was definitely not my first focus going in, although coming out, it certainly was.
All right. So now I have to ask you about that because you said it changed your life. You obviously, you know, cast an actor who has Down syndrome in the film. When you say it changed your life, talk about that a little bit. How so?
Well, I mean, just meaning I didn't know anyone that has Down syndrome when I made the movie. I don't have a lot of, special needs was not something that was even really on my radar. And I'm getting to know David and, and Chris and I and David walking through the process in a lot of ways. It was like art imitating life, imitating art, however that works out. But, coming out of that, man, I just saw like the need for, more inclusion and just getting to know individuals with special needs and realizing like I had put these guys, you know, put everyone in a box because that's just, I didn't have any experience, and realizing that like a movie like Where Hope Grows, there's going to be a lot of audience members that will have the same reaction I had where they didn't know somebody, they didn't have a person or a face to put with the Down syndrome. And now they get to see this character come to life. And then now they're coming out of that, they go, oh my gosh, like it's so much better. It's so much bigger. It's so much, you know, outside of the box than I had imagined. And so from there, you know, I just went into like, I got back into my church and got into special needs ministry. I got involved with different programs and still to this day, I mean, it's still like a super important part of my life. But it all came back to the experience of that movie.
So for you, Chris Polaha, what was the thing that when you saw the script, when you were approached about this, that made you say, yeah, I want to star in this movie?
You know, it's actually a great question, Billy, because I had written a script called The Biggest Little City. My dad was married before he met my mother to this woman, and they had three kids. And what he didn't know about her was that she was drinking a lot. And during the third pregnancy, she basically drank throughout the entire pregnancy. And my brother Michael was born with fetal alcohol syndrome. And so I'd written this script about a younger brother and an older brother. And the older brother had had fetal alcohol syndrome, and they were in Reno, and it was a whole different, it was still a very pro-life movie. And it was something that I wrote in 2004 and had always just wanted to make, and was kind of sitting on it. And I gave myself this weird time limit of 10 years. And right at the end of that time limit, Chris hit me with his script, and it was weirdly, it like ran on the exact same wavelength. Totally different stories, completely different, you know, one's Down syndrome, one's fetal alcohol syndrome, completely different, you know, disabilities, I guess, if we're calling them that. And it just spoke to me. Like, it spoke to me on a level that was supernatural. And it met me right where I was as far as needing a job at the time. I remember I was in Malibu at this house we had, and Chris and I knew each other. I met him the same night I met my wife. I walked into Casa Vega and Chris Dowling was on the left.
What a story that is. All right, anyway, we'll have to talk about that. Continue.
Yeah, that's very Hollywood. Casa Vega from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Like, I walk in and in fact, talked to Julianne at Chris Dowling's house the whole night, like the first night I ever met her. In fact, yeah. Fun stories.
Just go for it, because now I want to know. You throw this.
I think where he's going to go is the thing that also was there was I had sent him a Facebook friend request 4 years ago, unrequited Facebook friend request. So when I got a hold of him and I was like, hey, man, like, I didn't know if you just, you know, kind of hated me now or something because, like, you didn't accept my Facebook friend request. And so once we got to Louisville, we opened up his we opened up his Facebook and we cycled through all the way 4 years ago, and together we hit the detonator button and we were now Facebook friends together.
We accepted the friendship together.
It was 4 years later. Are you just really bad on Facebook? Is that because actually we're friends on Facebook, but I feel like it was a couple of years before you accepted mine too. So is this?
Yeah,
just
I'm terrible with Facebook. FYI, yeah. I'd never check it. You know, the problem is I have a fan. The only page I interact with is a fan page, and I don't get friend requests there. And so when I go back to my little Christopher page, I have all these requests from all these, and I have to literally just scale, go. And then I'll see somebody that I know, and I'm like, oh, request, yeah, I accept that.
Well, I feel terrible. Someone you knew, and you kept scrolling. Yeah, I'll come back to that guy later.
I mean, the best part of this story is you're like, the night I met my wife, it's like, this is a memorable guy. But, you know, listen, we'll forgive you for that. So you guys had this connection. He comes to you. He talks about this film. It mixes really well.
Yeah, he sent me the script and I read it, and immediately it spoke to my heart just because of my brother and my experience. And I knew that, like Chris, this is about 2013, and this is about 5 years before diversity became like the drum that Hollywood was going to beat. I mean, now we're living in the world in the age of representation, which is incredible and awesome. But Chris was really ahead of the time. And I also felt there was a need to have representation. And there was there needed to be different faces, different voices, different stories. Like, we've had this incredible narrative for 100 years being told. And now that we've really mastered the craft of telling the narrative, it's now time to share the way that those narratives were told with different people. And when you see David DeSantis on camera for the entire length of the movie, somebody who has Down syndrome, you know, Chris and I took this film around the country before it aired, and Albert Pujols has a foundation in Arizona. And it was a theater filled with families who have kids with Down syndrome. Brothers, sisters, sons and daughters. And these kids were seeing themselves on screen. And it's amazing. It's amazing what happens when you see yourself on screen.
Yeah.
You really do think you can fly.
It was pretty cool too. I remember at the premiere sitting next to David and Bill, his father and his family. And Bill was sitting like directly to my right. And Bill, and right when it opens up and David's on this big giant, movie screen. And it was like this otherworldly smile on his dad's face and tears just coming down. And it was like, here's a guy who, you know, 25 years ago got a diagnosis that his son was going to have Down syndrome in Louisville, Kentucky. Never in his wildest dreams did he imagine he was going to see his son as the star of a movie. And it was like, I can't even explain it, man. It just, it was so awesome. And of course, David was sitting next to him, and David hits him. He's like, Dad, stop it. It was great. Don't cry, Dad. But I was gonna say, the other cool thing, like, you know, we in a lot of ways, I'm not saying we created a hero that wasn't there, but like you're saying from representation, like it really is. There's a lot of people that have never seen someone that looks like them on screen. And he did, and Produce did become a hero in a lot of ways. We got messages from moms that their sons and daughters wanted to dress up as Produce for Christmas. I mean, for Halloween. So like they had, you know, they literally got like aprons and store aprons, and that was their Halloween costume because that's who they wanted to be. They wanted to be this guy that they saw on screen. And we've gotten messages on our Facebook page from moms who literally were thinking about having an abortion because they had a, you know, Down syndrome diagnosis in utero. And they said, hey, this kind of gave us strength to not do that. And like, how can you make a movie that is more life changing than something like that? Like, that's amazing. So like, that's why I think we do this and like, we love it. And, you know, we're not chasing, you know, senseless, silly movies that, you know, don't have meaning or don't have hope. And that's why I think Chris and I are really attracted to these kind of films.
Yeah, it shatters misconceptions that people have. You know, putting people in a box, like you were saying before, it's really easy to do that. And then you watch him and he's, you know, amazing in the movie. And you say, wow, you know, I would imagine there are a lot of people who probably reached out and said, yeah, you know, this shattered a misconception that we had. Maybe you even experienced that on set with, you know, cast and crew. I don't know. Can you speak to that at all, Dowling?
Yeah, this is a weird thing because my computer's about to die. So I'm going to really go grab my cord right now. So maybe Chris can speak to that.
And we can edit this. That's the best.
I will say that when we showed up for rehearsal, I had no idea what to expect with David. I was like, is he going to be off book? Will he have been able to read this? Like, I really had no comprehension of his comprehensive level to working with another actor. Because usually you show up on the day and you do a table read and, you know, people have already started making acting choices. And that David had his entire script was memorized. He had all his lines memorized. He'd worked on the script. He was able to talk about it. It was not like working with somebody with a disability. There was no difference between David and I and our approach. And then also you start learning that not everybody who has Down syndrome, just like the three of us, the two Chris's here, as similar as we may look,
and almost the same name, different spellings.
We are very different people. Like the three of us in a room are three completely different guys. And we're going to have, and the same thing goes with people with Down syndrome. You look at somebody with Down syndrome, you immediately classify them like, well, that's that person. But then when you meet David, you realize, whoa, this kid is as infinite as anyone else is. And he is so different than every other kid with Down syndrome you'll ever meet. He's got a wickedly, I mean, he was like, he had a punishing sense of humor. He was relentless. And he'd be like, what's the matter? Are you going to cry? Because he gets you to this point where you're like, wait, I thought I had gloves on because you have Down syndrome. I'm taking my gloves off, dude. Like it is equal ground here, man.
Yeah. It was just really cool because David had never acted before. And obviously to be a first time actor in any movie, Chris, you can attest to this. It's like, it's nerve wracking. It's scary. But he is so fearless, and he lives his life fearlessly, obviously. But it was such a I thought it was going to be such a barrier and so hard because he had Down syndrome to get him in the place where he could do this. But because he was so fearless, and you can't teach that, or you can't – that's just – it made him, like, malleable. And he was like, dude, he crushed it. Like, he had a blast. And like Chris was saying, we just said, you know what? We're going to treat this guy like a dude. You know, and then if something happens, we'll figure it out. But it was like that was the attitude going in, was just like – He's just a guy. Like, let's just hang out and have fun. And again, you know, David's pretty funny because he is a dude. And so, like, there's a lot of moments in the movie where he'd be like, he didn't want to do something because it was like his character was getting picked on. But like, David does karate in real life, so he'd be like, dude. And so we'd do some takes where I'd be like, all right, David's a great actor, so he's going to show us what Produce would do on this take. And then we do the final take and I'd go, okay, now David, show us what you would do. And instead of the bully picking on him, he'd like do karate kicks, or like when Chris is pitching him fruit, he would hit it every time because he's actually a really good softball player.
He could hit it. Right.
Yeah. And I was like, dude, you gotta miss it, bro. Cause like, I know David can hit it, but produce, he's just learning. And he was like, oh, all right. But then afterwards I had to go, okay, now guys, David's going to hit it. And he just kept rocking it, you know? So it's like, we'd do things like that. Or one of my favorite things we did is, I had him create a playlist for, and put a song, attach a song to every single, scene we had. So like if ever he was down or the energy was off, we would just play that song and then we'd do a dance party. And there was one point at like 2 a.m, we had a probably 40-person conga line going through a supermarket while one of the PAs was holding his phone on like the PA system for the supermarket. And it was awesome. So it was like, I've done a bunch of movies. Chris, you've done a bunch of movies, but I can safely say it was probably my favorite set experience that I've ever had. It was just like, it was cool, man. We were all rallying around each other. Like we knew we were doing something important for, again, an underrepresented group. And it was just like, there's some magic that was happening. So I don't know, man. It was just, I really loved that one. It's always been a special place in my heart.
We could puff up David all day long, and he's deserving of it. But you also get a lot of credit because you set a tone. And for David's first film, you were probably the perfect director to work for him to work with, and for you to be working with him, because you created an atmosphere that was just filled with joy, filled with collaboration, filled with like the stakes couldn't have been higher, but at the same time, they never felt high at all. Like it was just like, we're here to play, we're here to make a really great movie and have a fun story. And you're like, it's fine, it's good, it's gonna work. And you gave me, I remember you gave me the keys to the kingdom, because one day you were like, I'm just gonna let you're in the scene with him, and when you understand it, when you get it, then we're gonna get it. So if you need to just repeat your line and ask him again and just get stuff out and just keep running the scene versus me coming in there being like, can you guys do it again, or cutting. And so you gave me the freedom to, within the scenes, just start like continuing to find life with David. And the result is wonderful. And it really is. Like, I remember that conga line, we're going through the grocery store and like, there was no ego. There was no, I mean, Billy Zabka was in the movie and he was talking about what he was wanting to do with Cobra Kai. But he was in a quiet place in his career, and Danica McKellar's in the movie, and she was in a quiet place in her career. And
yeah, it was fun.
There was no ego. It wasn't like, oh, we got to deal with so-and-so who won't come out of their trailer. Like everyone was on set waiting to start the film.
Yeah, well, talked about tone and like the music, right? I mean, the fact that you set up music for each scene with him, you went out of your way to do that. I mean, it sounds like you guys not only had fun, but that, you know, Chris Dowling, you were really leading the charge on that. So that's, and look, it's a special movie. People have reacted to this film very positively, as you guys have said, and as we've seen. I know that Pureflix fans are super excited about it, and you know, people have loved it now for years and are going to continue to, because there's a deeper meaning to it. And I want to talk about some of those elements. I guess we'll start with you, Palaha. When it comes to Kelvin, the character, you know, the person you are in Kelvin, you guys seem kind of different. And I know you're an actor, it's your job to bring a character to life, but what was it like to sort of dig in on Kelvin and find the elements you needed to make him, you know, bring him to the big screen?
Well, I think Kelvin's biggest obstacle was I had to raise the stakes just as an actor. He hated himself because he had failed. He was a professional baseball player. He was the kid of promise. He had tons of potential and all this hope and had no substance, no faith to back it up. It was all a worldly view of what success is and what it means to win. And on a professional level and in a very public way, he started losing. And once he started losing, I think it just became this habit in his life where he became a loser, and even the daughter that loved him so much, he didn't feel worthy of her love. And we don't even know what happened to the mother. We don't know if she just left, if she died. We like, and Chris and I talked about that, and he loved the idea of leaving it open-ended. He was like, well, let's just not know. Did she just run off with some other person? Is she gone? Like, what, we don't know yet. And it almost didn't matter, because it was the fact that everything that he loved just kept pushing away. Like when you put soap in the, you know, when you put salt and pepper in water and you put dish soap and it goes to the sides, it's like he just kept pushing love as far out. And so he was an alcoholic, ultimately. He started to drink his pain away, to drown his sorrows. And the trick that I, as an actor, my little secret was that he was trying to drink himself to death. So he was drinking, but he was drinking so intensely that his goal was to kill himself. And that's the moment where Produce enters his life and just floods his life with love and with, and ultimately through the church and through a relationship with Jesus, because I think Produce is a representation of Christ's love or God's love. And it's certainly a representation of what kingdom living is supposed to look like. Calvin starts to meet love, and he has to wrestle with this concept of what it feels like to be loved. And in it, all of a sudden, this woman enters his life, and the relationship with his daughter becomes better, and the relationship with Produce becomes this fecund, beautiful relationship, and he can't help but want to live again. And so you see him start to take those steps towards life, and it just became a real beautiful journey to play. And, you know, we've all met somebody, or we know somebody who's struggling with alcohol addiction or an addiction of a type. And if you've ever known somebody who's going through that, you know, it's easy to steal a few tricks and patterns. And so I think that's where Calvin got a lot of his physicality. And it's funny, though, I learned how to walk off balance. And for years after we filmed that movie, I would stand there and I would be in my shoes and I'd be like, ah, I'm doing the drunk stance. Stand still. stand firm.
No, it is pretty cool, I would say, because, you know, that also, like, we, you know, Calvin was an alcoholic, and it was really interesting and rewarding to see how many people also came up to me afterwards to be like, hey, that's my dad. Hey, that was me. Like, literally, I was at some screenings. I had a lady call her father and be like, hey, I need you to talk to my dad. He needs to see this movie. This is him right now. Like,
I have a,
so, yeah. So, I mean, so it was like, we didn't just tackle faith, and we didn't just have people that were touched by the, you know, special needs angle, but like, there was a huge contingent of people that saw a very real portrayal of addiction and what it can do and the steps to try to, you know, overcome it. And it was cool. Chris said, like, he came to me and said at the beginning, he said, hey man, my character has a secret. I'm not going to tell you. Now, as a director, I could be like, you're telling me right now, you're fired or whatever.
You know, you also wrote it too, right?
Yeah. So
yeah.
I'm like,
yeah, you
so
wrote it and you directed it. You're like, what are you adding that I did not? Like, what are you doing?
What don't I know about here?
So it was cool. So then he did the whole thing. And then afterwards he goes, hey, I just want to let you know, man, like, my secret was, like, I was literally intentionally drink myself to death. Like, right when I met Produce, like, and I was like, oh, that was cool. Like you said, it raised the stakes, and it was not explicitly written in the script, but like, it totally
makes
sense.
But it was there. I mean, I got it from your script. It was there.
No, but I'm saying, but that was cool. Like, I like that. Like, I actually have done that a couple times now where I'm like, I'll have an actor. I'll be like, hey, have some secret you don't tell me. It works, you know, because it was super cool.
You know what was awesome was that day you had this idea and you had me look at the counter where the alcohol used to be.
Oh, and the cabinet?
Camera was just, yeah, and the the cabinet. And the camera was just rolling. And you just let it roll. And it was probably like, that was a breakthrough moment for me personally as an actor, because I've never had the time. I've never been afforded the time on a set. A director's never granted me that gift to be like, just sit in it for a minute, see where it takes you. So one of my characters like, like that moment was so organic, unplanned. I didn't sit there and think about it the night before. Like usually you think of a scene and you're like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. It was just totally 100% in character. And then you gave me the freedom and the trust. I mean, that's, again, on you. That was a big deal to be able to just be there.
Yeah, dude, I love that scene. And it was pretty funny too, because you blew out the audio guy. I just remember watching him. He goes, ah, because obviously it was a very quiet moment. So the boom was right next to you. And then all of a sudden, the point was I was going to leave the camera on you. At some point you were going to break. And I didn't know what exactly you were going to do. But like you said, like you're going to feel it in the moment. But yes, then you suddenly, you know, this guttural scream came out. I just remember looking at the audio guy, him ripping off his headphones because it was so turned up because it was so quiet. It was great.
All right. I have to ask you guys last question here. This is really fun. You guys are like taking it over. You just get to kind of talk about it. And that's what I love about this. There's a lot of meaning here, a lot of really important themes, and it kind of brings it all back, getting to sit down and talk it through. I love that whole secret in the script thing. That's really interesting. Do you do that a lot, Palaha? Is that like something that you've done since then?
Yeah, I mean, not that was probably the most specific because it was directly a playable thing. You know, sometimes actors will be like, "Oh, I've got a character," and I'm like, "Yeah, but how do you play that? Like, what does that mean?" that was a uniquely playable action secret. But yeah, it's often like David's playlists. I remember working with Judy Greer and she created a playlist for her misguided character. And I think having music, having a tone or a color or a shape for a character, whether it's a really linear, an angle, like lots of angles, sharp angles, or if it's a rumply, you know, that's sort of ways to think about it. And with Calvin, it was just, the idea of death versus life was just on the forefront of everything. You know, that one scene where he stumbles into his daughter's room to check on her, which is supposed to be this real fatherly moment, but he's so drunk that he kind of stumbles up against the wall and she doesn't want to, you know, acknowledge that she's awake. So, I mean, it just breaks my heart because I can't imagine, you know, that being a reality for somebody. And unfortunately it is in so many cases.
For a lot of people it is. Yeah. And, you know, so that was not my last question. My last question, and I'll go to you, Dowling, is, you know, when you look at this project and everything we've talked about, we've hit a lot of different themes here. The thing you want people walking away with, what is that central message?
I mean, the most central message for me at this point is, well, again, everything I want people to come out having hope, like going in, and when they come out, they have more hope than when they arrive to watch the movie. But for me, it is putting a face on individuals with Down syndrome. So if you've never known somebody, you're afraid to talk to somebody, you don't know how to approach somebody, to walk into this movie and let produce be the person you approach. And so when you leave this movie, you now feel like you know somebody that has Down syndrome. So when you start interacting, or if somebody says something or uses the R word or whatever, like, you can actually go, "Hey, like, I've got a personal, you know, it's personal to me now." And I think that's what, again, as the cast and crew, we experienced that. And so that is my goal, is that coming away from this, if it's a family or an individual with Down syndrome, man, I hope we did you right, and that you have a hero you can look at on screen. And B, if you don't know anyone with Down syndrome, now you do.
Mm. How about you, Falaha?
I mean, I really have to second what Dowling just said. I think if you leave the movie feeling better about your life and about life in general, once you've left the theater, then we've hit our mark. Because I think there's movies that entertain, they take you away and they distract you and they make you kind of giddy in the moment. And then there's movies that really leave a mark and it's lasting and it has, because there's truth that's packed into the story. You know, it's funny, we could tell stories that are all frivolity and that mean nothing, or we can tell stories that have truth in them. And I think this is a story that's packed with truth. And I think if you can walk out of the theater and apply that to your own life, you will be better for it. And I think that that there couldn't be a higher calling, and there couldn't be a greater way to tell stories. And as an actor, it was such a gift to be cast by Chris and to have the opportunity to bring the story to life. I mean, it is really a movie that we are so proud of. And we're always finding ways to bring it back to audiences. And, you know, Chris and I were talking last summer to try to see if we could do live events or whatever it was to just keep, because it really is a beautiful movie.
Yeah. And I just wanted to say too, that if casting Chris and writing this movie was what it took for him to accept my Facebook friendship request, then it was all worth it at the end.
Well, listen, Chris and Chris, thank you guys for coming on today. Really appreciate it.
Hey, always good to see both of you fine gentlemen.
Everyone else, make sure you head over to PureFlix. You can watch the film Where Hope Grows. We'll see you again very soon.
Did you know you can access thousands of entertaining and inspiring faith and family-friendly TV shows, movies, and original series? It's simple. Just log on to PureFlix.com right now to start your free trial. From kids' content to some of the most uplifting films, we've got your entire family covered. Sign up today.
Well, you heard the man. You can sign up over at PureFlix.com for tons of faith and family-friendly content over at PureFlix. And that interview was a lot of fun. I love the two Chrises. The two of them are hilarious. They're talented. They love Jesus and they're making great content. Where Hope Grows is an amazing movie. You can stream it right now over at PureFlix and really take away the meaning in the film. You heard what they had to say about the making of it, what it was like working with David. Such a powerful experience, such a rare experience in Hollywood. And so I hope you enjoy the film. I hope you check it out. Again, it's Where Hope Grows over on PureFlix. And I will see you all next week for another episode of the PureFlix podcast.
That's all for today's podcast. You can follow PureFlix on Facebook at facebook.com/PureFlix and on Twitter at PureFlix. And be sure to log on today to PureFlix.com for thousands of faith and family-friendly movies and TV shows. Thanks for listening to the PureFlix podcast.